It's often been said that you are what you eat. Is that good or is that bad? Well, after Easter brunch or Easter dinner, it may be good, it may be bad. You are what you eat. Also, you are what you think. And that was what Jesus often said. It's not what you do, it's what you think. It's the basis of our Christian life. Nutritionists tell us that appetite determines your diet, your diet determines your intake, and your intake determines your health. For example, we know that drinking too much caffeine harms your body. At least that was the report yesterday. Maybe tomorrow will be different. We also know that alcohol is first a narcotic, then a depressant, and ultimately a poison that can kill you if you drink too much of it. Scientists tell us that certain foods raise your cholesterol and may lead to premature death. By the same token, certain foods are good for you. Fruit, lean meats, complex carbohydrates. Many people are under doctor's orders to eat a special diet. And some just want to lose weight. You are what you eat. You are what you take in. And this applies so much to the spiritual realm as well. Whatever you seek in life, you'll find it. Whatever pleasures it might be, or financial gain, or personal happiness, or it might be something higher or better, whatever you bring into your heart and soul, you will find. Jesus challenges us to look at our spiritual appetite in the fourth of our Beatitudes. As you know, this better part of this year, I'll be going through the Sermon on the Mount, and the Beatitudes are the first part of it. The fourth Beatitude, the penetrating words, "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled." They shall be filled. Well, our hunger determines our spiritual health. We're going to look at three principles of righteousness. One, the possibility of righteousness, the power of hunger, and the promise of fulfillment. Well, what does righteousness mean? For many of us, it's a mystery. We know it has to do with something, doing right or being good or going to confession or praising God or going to church, but is that really what it's all about? There was a singing group in the 1950s and 60s that had such a great sound that one of their contemporaries said, "Brothers, that's righteous." So they were then called the Righteous Brothers. Sometimes you can't put your finger on it, but if you hear it, if you see righteousness and hear righteousness, you know what it's all about. Let's look at four other uses of the word righteousness in the Sermon on the Mount. In Matthew 5:10, Jesus said, "Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness." This is the eighth and final beatitude. And you take the fourth and eighth together, it goes something like that. We are to hunger and thirst after a kind of life that will cause some people to persecute us for our faith. It doesn't sound very happy, but that is what God wants us to be. Stand strong and be strong. The second one comes from Matthew 5:20. "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." Now, the Pharisees were the religious leaders. They concocted a religious system built around attendance at the temple, intricate rules and regulations, hundreds and hundreds of laws, following precepts and traditions, and it was all about them. It was not about God. Their false righteousness was wearing cheap perfume or aftershave after going out for a run, hoping it'll cover up the odor. It's really not part of you, but it somewhat does the job, but not completely. True righteousness starts in the heart and changes a person from the inside out. That's how the change occurs. Now, Matthew 6:1 says the third use of the word, "Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them, but if you do, you have no reward for your Father in heaven." Well, the Pharisees loved to pray loudly in public. They loved to have the offering containers in the temple, and they would throw their gold and silver coins in to make sure they made lots of noise so the people would know what they were given. And in those days, there was no such thing as paper money. I remember back when I was a kid in the Lutheran church, the pastor used to say, "I want a silent offering." No change, just paper. But paper money really didn't come into being until about 600 A.D. The Pharisees would do everything to win the praise of men. They dressed up in their garb. They gave money so that everybody knew that they gave money. And they prayed loudly in the square so that everybody would see how pious they were. But there was no substance there. True disciples seek righteousness that doesn't need to be seen by anybody. Nobody but God. Most of us already know this next verse from Matthew 6:33. "But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well." Well, this touches the priorities in life. What are we really seeking? Fame, fortune, career advancement, good salary, a rise in the stock market, hopefully it's not going to go down, a secure future, which is part of that, happy retirement, a marriage partner who is copacetic with you, the fulfillment of your dreams. As good as these things are, they are not the most important things in life. Put God's kingdom first. Put him first in your life, and that will change you forever. It will change you forever. His righteousness means letting him be number one in whatever you do. Well, it means that doing things that are pleasing to God. It means living up to God's standard. To tell you the truth, I was appalled the other day when the federal judge approved the morning after pill to any woman of any age. The morning after pill, of course, refers to the situation of, oops, we had unprotected sex, so we got to do something about it. Well, in my opinion, if the egg is fertilized, the pill is causing death of a person. Another God-given life is gone. This is not God's standard for our life because we treasure life. Life begins at conception, in my opinion. I think many of you believe that too. Well, we put these four passages together, and what do you have? We are to hunger and thirst after a truly Christian lifestyle that changes us from the inside out so that we no longer seek the praise of men, but cause to seek God's approval above everyone else. Anyone who lives that way is blessed by God. Sounds good, but it's hard. It's not easy. It takes commitment. And that question leads us directly to the second important principle, the power of hunger. How many have really truly known hunger? Couple, just a few, have truly known hunger. The only time I was really hungry was when I was in Outward Bound school in the mountains of eastern Tennessee. I was about 30 years old and went there that was a job interview, which I didn't take. But I was to survive for 3 days with a canteen of water, a sleeping bag, and a poncho. And this was in October in the mountains of eastern Tennessee. Well, there was no vegetation, and believe me, trying to eat an acorn is terrible. They are awful. I did find some sassafras roots to chew on, but actually the hunger wasn't that bad because I knew that in 3 days we would have a feast. The second thing we had to do, we had to go into the city of Atlanta with a dime in 1970. So we were all dropped off, about 20 guys were dropped off each with a dime. Maybe you heard the story from me before. But being a city kid from New York, it was a piece of cake. At the end of the first day, I had three meals and stayed in a hotel. And I never went hungry because I took the dime and I bought underground newspapers and sold them. I bought them for a penny a piece and sold them for a quarter a piece. And so I made money. Then I had enough money to buy flowers. So I bought flowers and sold flowers on the street to people in cars. So I had plenty of money. It was easy for me. But a lot of the guys were sleeping on park benches and under trees. But that's on a going down a rabbit trail here. But it's a matter of being hungry. Not many people have really been hungry. Sometimes we feel hungry and we say, okay, we'll just stop at McDonald's and get a little something to quench that hunger, even though we ate 2 hours ago. Few of us have really known starvation. We've seen pictures and heard stories about people in Africa and other places that are really having a tough time. Most of us have plenty to eat. I heard that during the last Super Bowl, there was 8 million pounds of guacamole dip were consumed. We ate pizza by the acre and drank beer and soda by the ocean. You know, most of us have gained weight over the holidays, and in January and February, though we always so many commercials about the Easy Crunch, the Ab Flex, all kinds of gizmos, and also a secret pill that nobody knows about. You take that secret pill, and it'll all go away, and you look like Charles Atlas. I just received an email this morning which said, "Biggest Loser, 30-day jumpstart. Get a beach-ready body by May 7th. Well, the cruise will be over by then, almost. So I just kind of erased that one. Too late for me. Well, the major problem with this beatitude is that we rarely hunger and thirst after anything. Our passion is not in our hearts and souls. But consider the words of Proverbs 16:26. The laborer's appetite works for him. His hunger drives him on. It says that the saying is that necessity is the mother of invention. Hunger does have its benefits. It keeps a man going rather than quit. Well, I think the problem that many people have is spiritual malnutrition. You eat junk food, you think junk food, that's the result. You know, ladies, have you ever spent hours getting a dinner ready for Christmas or Easter? And all of a sudden, everybody gathers around the table, and there's one little 10-year-old boy who's no longer hungry. That was me, because I got into the cookies. I just came out of the oven. I did it a long time ago. The tragedy of our time is that so many people are wasting their lives chasing after three things they can never satisfy: money, power, and more power. We want money so we sacrifice our families and our jobs and our ethics to get there. We want power so we sacrifice friends and family and jobs just for power. And when we get it, power and money, it doesn't satisfy, does it? We want more and more. Dwayne Thomas, who was a running back for the Dallas Cowboys in the 70s, had it right. He kept on hearing writers refer to the Super Bowl as the ultimate game, and he said, if it's the ultimate game, why do we play it again? Over and over again, year after year. Nothing in this life satisfies us forever. Which leads us to the third and final principle. The first one was the possibility of righteousness, the second one was the power of hunger, and the third is the promise of fulfillment. They will be filled. But with what? Food? No. Money? No. Long life? Never promised. Pain-free life? Jesus said we would have trouble. Happiness? No. A perfect family? There was a little cartoon I saw a few weeks ago, actually a few years ago, of a man sitting in an auditorium completely alone. And on the big banner in front of the auditorium, it says, the convention of families that are perfect. He was the only one there. If you want righteousness, you can have it. Whatever you want in the spiritual realm, you can have. Because it's a gift that God gives us, like salvation. Righteousness is a gift that we can have. Most of us are as close to God as we want to be. Not too close. Just nice. A nice way away, arm's length. We want to be close, but we don't want to be intimate, do we? Just comfortable. We may have about as much joy as we want, as much peace as you want, but there can be a lot more, because that's where you want to be. Wherever you want to be, you will be. If you are hungry for something better from God, you can have it, because God has it like a big banquet all ready for us. That banquet is yours. John 10:10 says, Christ came so we might have life and have it more abundantly. If you want it, you can have a close walk with God. If you want it, you can have a better marriage. If you want it, you can do God's will. If you want to, you can grow spiritual. You can become a man or a woman of God, and everybody will know you by that. If you want to, you can change deeply ingrained habits. And if you want to, you can break destructive patterns of behavior. But it's a matter of going to God and asking for his power to come into your life. Come unto me. I close with this final thought. Jesus never says, come and join the church. Or he never says, come and be baptized. Or come and give money. He says, come unto me, because I am the way, the truth, and the life. If you're hungry, come and eat the bread of life. If you're thirsty, come and drink the water of life that Christ gives you. If you're weary and heavy laden, come and he will give you rest and power and strength. And if you're guilty, come, because you will be forgiven. If you're far from God, come into his arms. Be intimate with the Lord. Let him come close to you. What a change that will be. The French philosopher Pascal says, inside the human heart there's a God-shaped vacuum, and it will be filled. But your choice, what it will be filled with. So many of us have filled our hearts with the junk food of the world. No wonder we're so unhappy. We have full stomachs and empty hearts. You can replace my anger and bitterness with peace and contentment. Nah, I can't take the chance, because I don't want to let my walls down. I don't want to let God come into my life, because it might upset the apple cart. No wonder that many stay the way they are. They're trapped in a pit of 1,000 excuses. Can't do it because, can't do it because, can't do it because. They'd rather have misery and pain than risk it all on the Lord and come close and let him be intimate with you. Well, 1,500 years ago, St. Augustine explained both the problem and the solution. He said, O God, you have made us for yourself, and our hearts are restless until they can find rest in you. And true happiness is when you put God first in your life. And you can never do that until you surrender your life to him at all. Well, let me give you some good news. In the kingdom of God, everything begins with a seeking heart. If you're tired of the life you've been living, you can make a new start. It doesn't matter how old or how young you are. Our congregation is among the senior congregations in the United States. And we have people who have really embraced the Lord and have made a tremendous change in their life. Whatever you want in the spiritual realm, you can have it badly enough, because Jesus said, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Are you hungry? Are you thirsty? If you are, you can be filled. This is the promise of God to hungry hearts and thirsty souls. And I'd like to end with something in my sermon that I didn't see until this morning. It says, happy face, I love you, from my wife.